Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to bridging the gap between adventure and adventurer by helping people select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Because many people don't have a physician, they depend on emergency rooms for care, and at times even those with insurance and access to health care turn to the emergency room when they don't have to and should not. That drives up costs for everyone, and later in the program we get a primer on how to best get the care you need. First, the Levine Museum of the New South has launched a multifaceted project with a focus on community. It's called #HomeCLT, and it explores Charlotte's neighborhoods through the voices of people who live there. The project is designed in phases, and the first of these is called Story Mining 250 to commemorate our city's 250th birthday. To accomplish this, the museum is seeking to gather 250 oral histories, and we're going to find out how that's going on and why this project is so important. We're joined by Catherine Hill, the president of the Levine Museum of the New South, and Dr. Willie Griffin is here. He's the new historian at the museum. Welcome to both of you.
Well, thank you for having us.
You're welcome. Thanks for being here. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can. You can reach us through charlottetalks@wfae.org. That's email, obviously. Search for WFAE on Facebook. Get to us through Twitter @CharlotteTalks, and you can watch us on Facebook Live. Before we talk about this project, let's talk about the two of you, because both of you are relatively new. Catherine, you were at museums in D.C. and Chicago and Colorado and Atlanta, among others, prior to coming to Charlotte. What brought you here?
This job, actually. It was Levine Museum of the New South. I'd heard about Levine Museum forever in my career and was actually surprised when I visited by how small the local footprint of this museum is, because nationally it's so much bigger. This is a museum that really transformed the way history museums could think about themselves in community, defied all the rules about what a history museum is. And that intrigued me. This is a place that uses history to build community.
Well, talk about that, because I don't. Just as the footprint may be small, I think the reputation in Charlotte may be as small as the footprint. And if we have, it's like CMS; they have a national reputation as well,
right.
And we don't appreciate that here. So,
yes.
So what are people saying about this museum that got you to leave really good museums elsewhere to come here? What are they saying? What is the Levine doing? What has it done historically? What is it doing now that has garnered all this attention?
It is a history museum that is as much about today and tomorrow as it is about yesterday. So it was never a museum about stuff. It was never a museum about objects. It's always been a history museum that is about people, and not just the leadership, but Levine Museum from its founding was dedicated to telling everybody's story. And to use those sort of traditional exhibits to convene dialogue across difference, to use history in a way that brings the community together, to talk about difficult issues, and to process them in the context of history. And history is critical to building community, right? We can't understand each other unless we understand our stories, where we've come from, why your perspective on an issue is so different from mine because of the experience that we bring to this discussion.
She sounds like a historian, Dr. Griffin.
She does.
I think you're the historian, but I'm not certain anymore.
Right. That was one of the things that attracted to me when I first interviewed. She sounded like one of my professors at UNC. Where I did my PhD. That was one of the things I told a lot of people when I was interviewing. I think she's a really great person to be leading the Levine.
You're new to the Levine, but you're not new to Charlotte. You grew up in Charlotte.
Yes, I did.
You grew up on the west side. You went to UNC Chapel Hill to get your doctorate, among other places. You taught history at West Charlotte. You were an assistant professor of history at Johnson C. Smith University. You came directly from the Citadel, I believe, where
That's
you
correct.
Were teaching.
Yes.
How does all of that experience and background inform what you do as the official historian at the museum?
Well, I think my background has been varied. I've taught in a number of different settings. As you said, I've taught at West Charlotte. I taught in public high schools in Baltimore. Mm. I've taught GED classes. I've taught community college classes. So I think what the Levine allows me to do is reach a wider audience. I've always considered myself more of a public historian than an intellectual historian who wanted to be sort of up in the ivory tower.
What does that mean?
Public historian, yeah. Someone who tries to reach wider audiences. When you're just a professor at a university, becoming an assistant professor at a university, it's an incredible opportunity and a great job to have. But you tend to only have access to those students who come into your classroom during the semesters. And so you have to find other ways to get outside of the classroom and do work in the community. And right. I thought that the Levine Museum offered me the opportunity to do that as a job. And it was a place that really valued my research, and my research is on Charlotte's local history. And so it's a place that I feel fully valued.
And you, prior to coming to the Levine, Catherine Hill, you were led the construction of the History Colorado Center, which the Smithsonian Institution recognized as one of the 12 top museums in the country. You also led the effort to open the Children's Museum in Atlanta, which I would think it kind of sounds like Imagineon. The name of it sounds like Imagineon, mm-hmm. but it's not the same thing. Does that mean that you have plans for Levine to do something similar, to expand the footprint in some way, either physical or metaphorical?
Yes, both.
Okay.
So as we think about home CLT and our future programming, we're thinking more and more about how porous our walls really are. Levine has always involved the community in the development of exhibits, but I think we can do that in a much more assertive way. And technology allows us to take our content out into the community in ways we've never been able to do before. So the facility itself, in some ways, becomes less and less important. But we're also aware that we are in Uptown Charlotte, which is changing. Our neighborhood is on the brink of transformation. Our facility has served us well for 20 years, but it's also kind of too small where we need it to be bigger and too big where we need it to be smaller. And so we are thinking about the options in right. this changing landscape.
You arrived on the scene, Willie Griffin, in June, and mm-hmm. this hashtag CLT project launched this month, August.
Right.
So was it underway before you got here, or did you simply hit the ground running and come up with this and launch it in 2 months?
So they were already in talks. This was an idea that was already ruminating around the museum when I got here. And so there were large plans for me when I came, that a large part of this would be about mining oral histories, which is the background, one of my backgrounds. And so I enjoyed getting out and talking to people in the city. And so it's a natural fit. I sort of hit the ground running, and I started finding people who I thought would make a great addition to this effort to collect stories on Charlotte's history.
According to the official literature of the Levine Museum, the museum believes that in order for Charlotte to change, Charlatans must get to know one another in a deeper way, share experiences, and find empathy and compassion for those whose experiences have been hidden. That actually sounds like something the nation needs, not just Charlotte. But how does a museum, and specifically this multifaceted project, accomplish that?
Well, the idea, I think, is to look at Charlotte as an amalgamation of neighborhoods, which is what, you know, most metropolitan areas are. And if you drop a pin in any one of those, you find a community that has an origin story, a today story, and people who are thinking about tomorrow. And this is in the context of a Charlotte that is growing like crazy, mm-hmm. but that is grappling with the fact that we are dead last out of 50 U.S. cities when it comes to economic mobility. So we are a city of great prosperity and a city of desperate poverty at the same time. This is against the context of the Charlotte uprising a couple of years ago that really surprised so many Charlottians because they didn't know what was in the ground. And so as we were thinking about our project, we were thinking about that context. And so what we decided to do was that we would take a deeper dive into these neighborhoods. The stories are told through the numbers, through the changing demographics and building density and income levels. But they're told, importantly, through the voices of the people who live there.
The permanent exhibit that's been on display at the museum for a long time, I'm not sure how long, Cotton Fields to Skyscrapers. I hear people talk about that exhibit all the time. People who've lived here for a while who just happen to wander in and go through the exhibit. And a lot of people who are just here for a day or a week or a convention we have on the program, and they said, I've just went to that museum and they have a wonderful exhibit. I learned everything about Charlotte. So, and it is. You learn the history of Charlotte and how we got to where we are physically. Mm-hmm. This is taking it into a new direction in a new dimension, correct?
Mm-hmm. That's correct. Because we think that the core exhibit, it's 18 years old, right? Mm-hmm. And so there are a lot of stories that aren't told within the core exhibit. And as history progresses, as events happen, people experience these events, and we need to understand those experiences. The closest thing between two people are stories. Mm-hmm. And if you think about Charlotte as a large quilt patchwork, we have to understand how each piece becomes a part of this larger fabric that makes up Charlotte. And so these stories really help us understand those gaps that the core exhibit may not.
Well, the nation has become very tribal, and the two tribes don't want to talk to each other. They don't hear each other. They're talking, but they're not hearing each other. And what you're saying is that we have neighborhoods all very different in their composition, demographically, socioeconomically, et cetera. And one of the things that this social capital survey that you referred to, Catherine, has revealed is that there's no interconnectivity. Mm-hmm. If you live in Matthews, chances are you've never been to the West Side. If you live on the West Side, you may never have gone to the University area. You live in the University area, you may never, until the Blue Line came in, you may never even have passed through NoDa. So there's no understanding in this small town in which we live. It's not a big city yet. That's important.
That is really important. And that was really the idea behind Home CLT, is that this gives you an opportunity, if you live in South Park, to travel to West Charlotte, to look at the history of Biddleville, to hear the voices of the people who live there today. But the other thing about Home CLT is it gives us an opportunity to experiment with new technologies that weren't available when we were developing Cotton Fields to Skyscrapers. So this exhibit, which is really kind of an experience, combines sort of traditional media and hardware, if you will, with augmented reality, and gives us a chance to take those voices beyond the walls. So if you get very interested in the history of Eastland Mall, Wallora Lake, maybe we can entice you to go there with your phone and to learn about history in the places it happened.
Wow. Because you're saying that every neighborhood has an origin story and a today story. Mm-hmm. Well, if you're a newcomer to Charlotte, or if you've lived, say, in Elizabeth your whole life, don't you already know those stories, or do you know enough? What does knowing more help you to achieve?
I think that knowing more helps you be able to deal with the issues that we're currently facing right now. I think history is something that we don't take serious enough. Mm-hmm. I think if we do more vigorous, make more vigorous attempts to understanding how the past has unfolded and sort of the effects that it's had on us, I think that we know how to make more informed decisions or better informed decisions. So I think just the history and the information helps us make better informed decisions.
And that's one of the impetus is for this project. Dr. Willie Griffin is here. He's the historian, the new historian at the Livia Museum of the New South, along with Catherine Hill, who's the president. We're going to take a break. We're going to come right back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that believe a car is used for more than just getting from place to place. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins, along with Catherine Hill, the president of the Levine Museum of the New South, and Willie Griffin, the new historian there. I asked Dr. Griffin, a question about how collecting these stories and how understanding, if you're a resident, newcomer or not, of a particular area, how knowing the history of your neighborhood helps. What does it do for you? And you wanted to chime in on that.
Well, what you asked, Mike, was, you know, you talked about how insulated we get in our own neighborhoods. And we don't venture out beyond our sort of prescribed paths. Mm-hmm. My first day on this job, the museum held a panel discussion with Hugh McCall and Ron Leeper. Ron Leeper had been a member of City Council. Hugh McCall, of course, was president of Bank of America, and Mr. McCall went to Mr. Leeper and asked for something, and Mr. Leeper said, "I'm not even going to talk to you. I've got open sewers on the west side of Charlotte. I need to deal with that." And Mr. McCall said, "I don't believe you." So they got in a car. And Mr. Leeper took Mr. McCall to a part of Charlotte that he had never seen before, and it transformed his understanding of Charlotte. I heard them tell this story on my first day here. Mm-hmm. And I thought, that is so powerful. So if we help Charlottians understand the Charlotte within their own neighborhoods and beyond it, that builds community. That's how you use history to build community.
How do you get people to be part of this in terms of not just participating? And we'll talk about what mm-hmm. you want people to do, but just to take advantage of it. How mm-hmm. they have to come to you? How does it work?
Well, the way this project is conceived is that it's an on-site experience, but it is also has a component that takes you off-site. So through augmented reality, through a partnership that we have with the School of Arts and Architecture at UNCC and with the library, we're creating augmented reality experiences that you can access through your device in places where history happened. So we hope that...
So for people who are not familiar with augmented mm-hmm. reality, mm-hmm. So let's say, I don't know what you've done. To give me an example of what you've done, a neighborhood. I'll take my device. Mm-hmm. What happens?
You take your device to what is now South Tryon, okay. which used to be Brooklyn, for example.
Okay.
And
it's second ward.
Second ward. Mm-hmm. And what you'll see are on your phone, you see Second Ward today, but you can also bring in historic photographs that sort of float on top of that so you can see the way it used to look. And you can hear stories of people, right, that talk to you about this transformation.
And so when you say device, you're talking a smartphone.
Smartphone.
Or a tablet. Mm-hmm. Does it have mm-hmm. to be hooked up to...
It's an app.
It's an
you
app.
Download mm-hmm.
It's already
the app.
In the app. Yeah. It's already mm-hmm. in the phone. Okay.
That's right.
You're dubbing hashtag #HomeCharlotteCLT as an urban autobiography that peels back the layers of time to show the city in new and surprising ways. That's what you're just talking about right mm-hmm. there. And you're seeking also to do this through voices. These are the stories that you're hearing when you're doing this augmented reality?
That's right.
And you're working with us here. I didn't mm-hmm. know anything about this until yesterday. You're working with WFAE. What are we doing with you?
So you are helping us collect stories. People like to often share their experiences mm-hmm. of growing up in Charlotte, fond memories. You receive calls about that every day. We receive letters, people wanting to share their stories. We received a letter from a 96-year-old woman named Betty Warner who lives in Morganton. And she wrote a letter last week about when she moved to Charlotte when she was 17 years old. It was in 1939. And so what we do is try to look into that letter and read between the lines and understand the historical context. So she would have been moving to Charlotte when industries in Charlotte were shifting to help with war production.
Right.
All right. And so there was a lot of influx of new people coming into Charlotte. And she talks about her experiences. She lived on South Tryon, lived with three other people in a one bedroom apartment, how convenient everything was, how she spent time going to the Carolina Carolina Theater or eating at S&W Cafeteria. So these are just really experiences that are fond to her, but it right. helps us understand what life was like for a young 17-year-old fresh out of, you know, a year of college.
So you're doing this project in phases, and mm-hmm. the first phase is called Story Mining 250, which happens to coincide with the 250th birthday of this city, which is mm-hmm. this year. And you're, again, you're doing this through oral histories, and this kind of left off the page to me because I could be wrong because I'm challenged when it comes to math. But I don't think that there's anybody currently alive who was here 250 years ago. I could be wrong about that. So how are you collecting oral histories about 250 years ago?
Well, Story Mining 250 really refers to our effort to collect 250 today stories.
Okay.
Right. And that's in honor of Charlotte's 250th birthday. And no, we don't have live voices from 250 years ago, sadly. But there are oral histories out there from bygone days. And so we, both in audio form and in written form, so we will be pursuing those and figuring out how to integrate those into the sort of exhibit experience.
So what kind of people do you hope to hear from? What kind of people have you already heard from? What kinds of stories are you hoping to uncover?
So really, no, there's no sort of we want to hear from anybody and everybody.
No preconceived notions
about anything. Any experiences that you've had here in Charlotte are welcomed additions. One of the oral histories that I've conducted so far was from Larry D. Melton, mm-hmm. who is a longtime insurance agent who is really a pillar in the Batesford Road corridor. And so he is someone who had really helped integrate the insurance industry as an African-American in the early 1970s. And so I thought his story was really important because we don't often hear about these kinds of stories, African-Americans who are seeking to relocate to the black community and set up businesses. His business has been on Batesford Road since 1988. He's been there for over 30 years. And so in just, I guess, mining through his voice and the stories that he provided, I found out that one of the first places that he moved was Hidden Valley, and it was in the 1970s when Hidden Valley was very much an integrated neighborhood. And so you begin to learn mm-hmm. how Hidden Valley as a neighborhood transitioned to gain its current reputation.
Since you have no preconceived notions and you don't know necessarily, and you don't know when you go in to collect these stories exactly what you're going to get when you come out of it, will you use all of these stories, or will some of them hit the cutting room floor, so to speak?
I think some will not show up mm-hmm. in the exhibit experience, for example, but that's why this partnership with WFAE is so wonderful. Some of the stories will be archived in the UNCC Atkins Library Archives. Some of them will provide content for WFAE in podcasts and the various media that you have access to that we don't. Some may show up as graphics on walls within the museum. And some, of course, will be incorporated into the exhibit.
And you are seeking truth, not fiction. You're seeking actual history.
Right.
So
no,
how do you vet these stories? And even how do you clear away the cobwebs? Because everybody knows, everybody within families, mm-hmm. When you sit down and talk at the Thanksgiving table about somebody who in the past or something that happened in the past, everybody at the table has a different point of view on it. So how do you know where the truth lies? How do you get to the kernel of truth?
Well, we talk about the stories. You know, it's not we sit around and share the stories, and then we talk about why this story would be a good addition to an exhibit or so. So we sit down and really talk in depth about mm-hmm. what was what we heard, if it's an oral history, what we read, if it's in letter, and if we're mining a story from an old newspaper article, we're really trying to decide what is the truth, what value will it have or serve.
Right. And it's one reason why the stories are one layer of this exploration,
right.
the data tell a lot of stories about Charlotte's transformation. And sometimes the data may sort of conflict with the personal stories.
When you say data, what are you talking about?
I'm talking about demographic changes over time.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Building density, income levels, mm-hmm. and we found we're partnering with a professor at the School of Arts and Architecture, Dr. Ming-Chun Lee, and he has created an augmented reality app where you, on your phone, can scroll your finger across time and actually on the map watch bar graphs rise up.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
And you can watch the demographic changes happen in a way that is so experiential and so powerful.
I'm glad you said that. Experiential, powerful. It is sometimes eye-opening.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do with that information? As a person who's gone through this experience and you now understand what has happened over time to individual neighborhoods, what are you supposed to do with that information?
Right. That's a great question. So what Levine Museum has always done is posited these questions mm-hmm. and then used through programming and through dialogue opportunities to convene the community around those questions and to bring us together kind of to talk about the next things. And I think that as part of this entire effort, we're looking at taking dialogue a step further into how do you translate dialogue into actual social action? What do you do next?
I think these stories also force us not to make assumptions about people. I mean, it helps us understand that history is a little more difficult than just being able to draw conclusions based off of what you hear on the media.
Does it also blow the dust off of history? A lot of people think history is boring because it's dusty.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because these are real people.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Sharing their history.
Correct.
I don't know how many stories you have collected at this point, because this is going to be a long-term project. Mm-hmm. But as these stories have come in, and you're an historian, so you know a lot about Charlotte. That's your area of expertise as well. Have people told you things you didn't know? Have they told you things that surprised you, told you things that challenged what you already knew?
Not really. It's hard to surprise a historian, you know, because there's so much. I just think that what these stories, they have provided new layers to the history that we may not or may have known. One letter I remember, a lady who talked about her father, who worked at the Carolina Theater, and she had programs that she wanted to share from events that were held programs that were held at the Carolina Theater. So, I mean, you find a little more insight about how the Carolina Theater operated, what kind of programs that they had. You know, I guess that's the extent of what you sort of find out.
We always hear on this, when we do shows about history, and Dan Morrill will tell you this, he's an historian, that there's plenty of history in Charlotte, and there are plenty of historical buildings in Charlotte. He took me to task once for saying we've torn everything down. We have not, he says. and your area of expertise is Charlotte history, and specifically civil rights.
That's correct.
When ordinary people think about civil rights movement, the cities that come to mind are Selma and Montgomery, maybe Washington, D.C., because of the march, Dr. King's March on Washington. When you think about civil rights in Charlotte, you think, well, nothing happened here. We pride ourselves on being one of the few southern cities that did it quickly, easily, and for business purposes. But you say that we have a lot of civil rights history in Charlotte. We just don't know it.
Yeah, we just don't. I mean, if you think about the civil rights movement, especially the periodization that we use, usually it follows the narrative of Dr. Martin Luther King from 55 to 68. But you have to also factor in the growth and spread of televisions at the time, and that's something that just traditionally the general public does not talk about. In 1950, only 9% of American homes had televisions. Wow. But by 1955, 68% had televisions. And so that's the same year that the Montgomery bus boycott really took off. And so everything that we know about the civil rights movement has been informed by television, you know. And so we have to ask this question, who was covering the organizing, the grassroots organizing before television came involved? And so my research looks at a journalist who's from Charlotte who traveled all around the South from the late 1920s up until the 60s documenting grassroots organizing in communities, not only in Charlotte, but just, again, all over the country. And so this shines a new light on the civil rights movement.
And television, the advent of television, particularly television news, came into its own about that same time.
Exactly.
The civil rights movement was really beginning to heat up, and it was kind of it was a partnership, not an intentional partnership, but because TV took their cameras there, it probably escalated some of the things that went on.
Sure.
And it also amplified what was going to take place organically anyway, and revealed that to people who had never seen anything like that. It shocked America, and it moved the needle. Something's happening today, not unlike that.
Yeah, social media. playing the same role. So it's not anything new. It's just we have to pay attention to how we're receiving this information about what's going on in different places. And it's important for us to stay informed, but you just have to be very careful about what you are reading on social media today.
Right. This is the first phase of this project. How many phases will there be? How long does this go on? And once it's up and running, does it stay up and running forever? Because it's virtual, some of it.
Yeah, I think so. It will change as technology changes. How many phases? I think that's a good question. We're going to start really with a deep dive into five Charlotte neighborhoods and expand from there. But we are not thinking about this, even the on-site experience, as a traditional exhibit. And we're not talking about an opening. We're talking about a launch, because this is very much a project that's created with the community and facilitated by Levine Museum. So that's why the story mining part of this is so important.
Right.
And we'll invite people in next February to take a look at what we've got, to tell us what works and what doesn't, and to help us craft a better, more effective experience.
I have a minute left. Jonathan on Facebook says, can you ask your guests if they have any materials about the Freedom Train that traveled across the country in 1976 for the bicentennial and stopped in Charlotte in September or November of that year, I believe. It had some fascinating artifacts that an 8-year-old boy thought were amazing.
Oh, wow. Never heard of it.
Really?
I have to look that up.
Okay.
Yeah.
How do people who are interested in this, in participating in this, do so?
Go to our website, museumofthenewsouth.org, and you'll get all of the details around that.
And the first phase of hashtag HomeCLT, Story Mining 250, is that up and running physically?
It's not. So it's in the development phase, which is why our partnership again with WFAE is so important, because you're helping us get the word out.
Okay.
This is the story collecting phase, and we'll launch the first phase in February.
Catherine Hill is president of the Levine Museum of the New South. Dr. Willie Griffin is the historian. The new historian there started in June. Busy guy. Thank you both for being here. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you for having us, Mike.
Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to helping customers select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.